And we're live. Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of the Wheelie Podcast. I'm your host, Micah Toll, and I'm joined by Electrek's Seth Weintraub. How's it going, Seth?
I'm good.
Awesome. And we have a bunch of new stories to talk about this week. We have plenty of new bikes being unveiled, very different types of e-bikes. We're going to talk a little bit about Rivian's Also e-bike. We've got some motorcycle stories as well, and an interesting electric motorcycle from Segway. Honda's got something kind of weird to throw in the ring. As usual, we've got another state to talk about some new e-bike laws, and a few other things I think get thrown in there. So where are we going to start with this week, Seth?
Let's start with something good. Juice Bikes is back. New e-bikes bring big power, big, better safety, and lower prices.
Yes, I remembered to put a good happy news story first this week, so we get to start on a happy note. So this is a really cool story. I'm really glad to finally be able to tell this one, is that Juiced Bikes is back. Now, we talked about late last year the process of Juiced getting bought, or the, you know, what was left of Juiced getting bought by the folks from Electric E-Bikes. And their stated goal was to basically bring it back to its heyday, you know, to build bikes that the kind of fans that Juiced always had would be proud of. And it looks like that's exactly what they're doing. So they've relaunched the Juiced Scrambler in both a hardtail and a full suspension version. And the bike looks every bit what you'd expect a Juiced bike to look like. You know, it looks like that moped style. It looks like, you know, a Super 73 competitor. Having both the hardtail and the suspension, the full suspension model, give people, you know, the option to upgrade a little bit or to have a bit of a more affordable version, though both are quite affordable, you're going to see here in a minute. But the specs also stick with that performance that we've come to know and love from Juiced, right? So we've got a 750-watt motor in both of these. That's a continuous rating. The peak rating is actually around 1,700 watts or a bit higher. Nice. Yeah, they're using a full 30 amp controller. So, you know, they're getting as much power as they can in that thing. They do hit class 3 speeds, so you can go up to 28 miles per hour, but they're programmable. So you can make it, you know, class 1, class 2, class 3, however you want this bike to ride. And it's got a big battery. You know, Juiced was always known for having those big 52 volt batteries. And again, we've stuck with that. We've got 52 volt, 19.2 amp hour. So that's about 1 kilowatt hour of battery. Though on the hardtail version, you can add a second battery. There's room for it, so you can get 2 kilowatt hours of battery there. The other kind of neat thing that we hadn't seen before is that now these bikes have integrated displays. So it's kind of down between your knees in the top tube area. I don't know if you can still call that a top tube on this style of bike, but, you know, effectively the top tube of the bike. And so Juiced is pitching that as, like, you know, a safer, less chance to get damaged, solution. I'm sure that's true to me. Like, it's a little bit weird to look down that far to see, you know, like, how fast am I going? What, you know, pedal assist mode am I in? Though I don't think too many people are going to pedal these. So that's like the one area that I'm not quite sure how I feel about. Maybe, you know, once I get a chance to ride one of these, I'll change my tune there, but, I'm slightly skeptical about the placement there. But other than that, these look like great bikes. But the real kicker here, and I saved this for last, is the price. The full suspension version, this is the nicer one, is priced at $1,899. So that's like over $1,000 cheaper than Super 73's full suspension bikes. And the specs are basically on par or better. For the rigid, you know, the hardtail, the front suspension only bike, it's $1,699, which is just like crazy for something that gives you this much power, this much range, in something, you know, so affordable. I mean, these are, I hesitate to use the term, like, you know, blank killer, like Super 73 killer, right? Like, you know, they're different brands. They've all got their legacies. They've all got their fans. But, like, if you put the spec sheets, you know, one next to the other, you're going to be pretty hard pressed to say, like, what am I missing out on if I go with anything other than this bike? Like, if you want a moped style bike, right? Now, these are still going to be heavy. They're bulky. They're, you know, these are not your, like, pedal it for exercise kind of bikes. But if you're in the market for a moped style bike, I mean, it's just hard to imagine finding anything that's going to give you more bang for your buck here. And that goes right back to what the folks at Electric do. Like, they give you the best bang for your buck because they've got that incredible buying power. I mean, they're so big at this point that they can just squeeze more and more out of suppliers, get better and better prices themselves so that they can pass on those savings. And so not only is it cool to see juice getting saved, but the right people ended up doing it to not only bring the brand back, but do it at such a reasonable price point that they can just compete so aggressively against the legacy moped style bike brands. I mean, this kind of blew me away, Seth, when I saw not only the specs, but the pricing.
Yeah, I agree. I even like the new logo. I don't know if you guys are watching, you can see the juice box logo on there. I love that. Great all around. It's a great looking bike. I think looks are in this market are super important, you know, for better or worse, electrics, like, you know, XP, they look kind of like, you know, just bikes, but these are clearly like super 73 style. Like, there's definitely a style component to these. You know, my only, you know, when I look at these bikes, the only thing I'm thinking right off the bat, I love the 1 kilowatt hour battery size, but that's a big battery and that's up pretty high. And of course, Super 73 puts their batteries up pretty high as well. But I just wonder if there's a, you know, a lo- like for instance, the hardtail you said can hold two batteries. I wonder if the second battery is a better position to have it in just because it's lower center of gravity. I mean, as you know, and you said, like, people are not using this as a pedal bike. It's, you know, it's just being throttled around, but still it's you know, I always like to have the lower center of gravity. The other thing is, you mentioned class three, is there still going to be like a race mode on this where, you know, theoretically, if you're not on the road and not on a bike trail, you can go over 28 miles per hour. The old juice bikes had something like that.
Yeah. As far as I know, there's not a like totally unlimited. I believe the highest performance class is putting it in class three mode. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's something hidden in there in the settings to do it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's been anything advertised or officially stated about being able to go past class three. And that's probably just due to the much higher pucker factor that a lot of companies are having to deal with now when it comes to tighter laws, especially right. In California, but many other states as well, in terms of, you know, exceeding legal limits. So I'm not surprised at all that they haven't advertised something like this, and whether or not it even exists is, you know, still to be seen, considering how worried some companies are about exceeding those limits.
Yeah, I mean, the old juiced Hyper Scrambler and Scorpions would get up to like 34 miles per hour, 35 sometimes, in the race mode. So you're not talking about a whole lot of extra speed. You're talking about like 4, 5, 6 miles per hour higher with, you know, fully unleashed motors. But, you know, that does differentiate a little bit. So when we get these, we'll have to find out if there's like a secret way to make these go a little bit faster.
Yeah, though, even at 28, I'm sure they're going to be pretty fun.
Yeah, oh, for sure. 28 is on these things is going to be a blast. And, you know, the kids out there who, you know, this is a new market, you know, juiced left a different market than they're kind of entering into again, because every other kid has some sort of, you know, Yozma or a Suran or Talaria or something. And a lot of parents are probably like, I don't feel comfortable with a 40 mile per hour bike for my kid, you know, my 12-year-old, but I feel a little bit more comfortable with a 28 mile per hour bike for my kid. And if these look just as cool and they accelerate pretty quickly, like, that's going to be a sweet spot for a lot of parents, I think.
Yeah, and that actually reminds me. So there's so many pieces to these bikes. Like, you know, I forgot to mention the high quality suspension, the quad piston brakes. But the one other thing that I forgot to mention that you reminded me of is that these have a really interesting parental control mode where parents can set a password protected speed limit themselves. Oh. So that You know, let's say like, you know, you get your kid the bike, but he's 16 and you're not ready for him to go 28. You can set the speed limit to like, you know, 22 or 23. And then it's like, maybe at the end of the year, if you have all A's, I'll bump you up to 25. And, you know, so the parents actually get that level of control, assuming the kids don't find it first and set the password and lock out their parents.
Right. Or they figure out a way to reset, you know, the password royally or something. Because how many kids are better at technology than their parents? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Find the factory reset option.
Right. Well, I think it's good overall, and it's great to see Juice back. Let's move on. Ride One Up makes history launching world's first e-bike with semi-solid state battery.
Yeah, this one's exciting because we talked recently about Giant announcing that they would be bringing a semi-solid state battery e-bike to market using the semi-solid state batteries from TND, a company that was spun out of Bafang. And right after I wrote that story, I got a message from Ride One Up and they were like, hey, you know, we haven't told anyone yet, but we're actually going to be doing this even sooner than Giant. I was like, that's awesome. Tell me all about it. And so here we finally get to talk about that story. And that is the new version of Ride One Up's Rev One. That's their, for lack of a better term, Super 73 style e-bike, kind of like the Juiced Scrambler and the others in this moped style category. They've launched this newest version of it. This one is called the Rev One Evo. And this is the one that's going to come with that semi-solid state battery. It's also a 1 kilowatt hour battery. It does make the bike a little more expensive. I think the full suspension version with the original battery is somewhere around like $1,900, $2,000. And this one's $2,395. So you have to pay a little more for that semi-solid state battery. You do get some other nice things here as well, but that's like the real prize here. And this is exciting because we've been waiting for full solid state batteries for, you know, years now, maybe decades in the EV industry. And while we're not there yet, at least for electric bicycles, we're still probably at least a couple years away from full solid state batteries, semi-solid state batteries, which replace almost all of the liquid electrolyte with a solid alternative. That's the solid state. They give you basically almost all of the advantages. So you get the safety that you can basically, you know, cut the cell in half. You can drive a nail through it. It's not going to explode or catch fire. You get the increased energy density, though it's not quite as energy dense as full solid state batteries. You get the better cold weather performance. So when you bring these things down to not just freezing temperatures, but like, you know, 0 degrees F, or I forget what that is, like minus 11, 15 something C, that they perform much better than traditional lithium ion batteries at those lower temperatures, as well as longevity. So these packs are said to be rated for around, I think it's 1200 cycles, if I'm not mistaken. Or about 10 years of use, because in addition to cycles, lithium ion batteries just age from basically sitting on the shelf. So whereas a typical e-bike battery is probably going to last you around 3 to 4 years with, you know, pretty good usage, these are said to be rated for closer to 10 years, which if you've got an aluminum frame bike, like you're getting up near like kind of the recommended lifetime of the bike itself at that point. So you're no longer talking about batteries as, you know, a replaceable part of the bike. Is something that at this point with semi-solid state batteries are going to be designed to basically last as long as a bike. So to me, this is super exciting. Now the bike itself, also super cool, full suspension, nice suspension, quad piston brakes, you know, same thing, class 1, 2, 3 capabilities. You can go up to 28 miles per hour. In the past, Rev Ones did have that option to unlock them to do, you know, sort of like the off-road. I think when I tested one of these, I got it up close to 35 or 36 miles per hour. I think Ride One Up was doing a good job of, you know, sort of making sure that you weren't just some like, you know, 14-year-old unlocking these things. So you had to get a code from the company, though at a certain point that stuff just makes its rounds on the internet. So I don't know how hard it's going to be to unlock these anymore. And I don't know if the Evo is yet going to come with that off-road mode to go past class 3. But again, like even at 28 miles per hour, these are super fun bikes. And, I've had a lot of good experience on the previous Rev One models. So I fully anticipate that this Evo is going to be, you know, just as fun, if not more. But again, like, it's not just about the bike model here. It's about bringing in that new semi-solid state battery. And if they can pull this off, which it seems like they're going to be able to, I spoke to the company and they said, you know, they've already got the first production batch undergoing UL certification now. So, you know, they're doing all the tests. This isn't like a, you know, we plan to produce this thing. It's like these batteries are already on the production line. They're already going through the tests. And this bike, which is now available for pre-order, is set to begin deliveries in August. So assuming they can do this and deliver, this is basically the beginning of a paradigm shift for e-bike batteries in this industry. It just changes the game about what's being offered from a 3-year battery to a 10-year battery, from 500 cycles to 1200 cycles, from like, the range cuts in half below 0 degrees to like, yeah, I can still ride it in the cold and not really have that big of an impact kind of thing. So this is very exciting. And this gets me like most of the way to what I would want from solid state batteries. Really the next big advantage of solid state, like pure solid state, is that they're just going to be even more energy dense. But you know, the safety is there, which is probably more important for a lot of people than just having a slightly smaller battery, and the longevity is there. So to me, like we're basically there in terms of the next stage of batteries, and that's just super exciting.
Yeah, it's fantastic. This one also has a 30 amp controller.
That's a good question. I'm not sure which controller it has in it. I think if I remember correctly, the only current number I remember seeing was that it comes with either a 9 or 10 amp charger. So it's a like super fast charger. That's the other thing I forgot to mention, is that semi-solid state, you can charge them much faster without a like health penalty, because you can charge, you know, normal lithium ion batteries pretty fast, but it degrades the battery fairly quickly. So with these, you can fast charge them without that. But I don't recall what the discharge current on the bike is.
Well, the battery itself is kind of the big story on this one, really. And it's funny because, you know, we talk about almost every episode about why it would be nice if they standardized batteries. And if this was a standardized battery, they could sell the battery by itself for people who have like a, you know, an old Scorpion, for instance, a Juice Scorpion, and their battery's, you know, now at 20% or 40% of what it was originally, or they're, you know, riding around in the wintertime and they don't get the range they need. Like if everybody had the same kind of battery, then all of a sudden this would be a fantastic upgrade. But because we live in a world where every bike company has their own battery and battery specs, each bike company is going to have to come out with their own, you know, solid state battery or semi-solid state battery. And then each bike company is going to, you know, it's just one of those things that's, you know, quite frustrating, because we have something really cool here, and it's going to be a very limited, you know, initially it'll be very limited and price sensitive. Whereas, you know, if we had a very standardized system, we could, you know, push these out to a lot more used bike company, or, you know, used bike people. So that's the downside. But the upside is like this is actually happening now. Like it's, you know, we've been talking about this for a decade and now it's actually happening. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we're finally here. It's like we've been brought to the promised land.
Yes. All right. Well, I can't wait to get my hands on one of these. We'll definitely get that review fired up here soon. Let's move on. This ultralight cargo e-bike from Jackrabbit can carry 10 times its own weight.
Yeah, we're back with another Jackrabbit story. I just love this weird, fun-loving brand. Jackrabbit, if you're not familiar, they make what they refer to as micro e-bikes, or I don't even know if they refer to them this way anymore. A lot of people call them micro e-bikes. They're technically not electric bicycles in that they have foot pegs instead of pedals, but in pretty much every other way, they feel like a bicycle. You know, they have bike handlebars, bike tires, bike forks, bike saddles, that sort of thing. But they fold super, super flat, like 8 inches wide. And so they've just been known as like these minimalist sort of e-bike alternatives. But because they've been fairly small, they haven't always been designed for carrying a lot of stuff. And Jackrabbit's newest model, the MG Cargo here, changes that. So this one is designed to carry up to 500 pounds of cargo, which is kind of crazy because the whole thing only weighs 55 pounds, which for a cargo bike is actually super light. Like, you know, you hear 55 pounds, like that's a pretty heavy bike. But for cargo bikes, that's like, you know, a third or half less than you'd used to see on, you know, these 80 or 90, even 100 pound cargo bikes. So that in and of itself is pretty cool. But the real fascinating thing here is just how small the bike folds up. So here, if you're watching along with us, you can see an image of two of these bikes in the back seat of a car, it looks like, behind the front seats. So I can't think of very many cargo bikes where you could fit one in the back row of a car, let alone two. So this is pretty wild in and of itself. But then, you know, to have all of the cargo accessories in the ecosystem, you know, they've got their passenger package, you can carry people on the back, they've got all the different like swap in cargo options, they've got panniers, there's a system for carrying boxes on either side. I think the fork has mounts as well, so you can you know, bolt things to the bosses on the forks. Basically, this is very much set up to be a, you know, honest to goodness cargo bike, and with that 500 pound rating, it gets designed to carry a lot of weight. Now, it's also got hydraulic brakes. I believe they're hybrid hydraulic brakes. And so there's a cable pull, and then the caliper itself has a hydraulic piston on it. But they're going to give you that stronger stopping power. And basically, I mean, these are very much set up for that kind of weight hauling. Now, personally, I don't know if I'd want to carry 500 pounds myself, because that's just a lot to put on a small bike. I know they say it's rated for it, but it just kind of blows my mind. You can carry that much. It's also like kind of a funny looking bike. If you objectively like just take a profile look at it, it's got that mullet design. So we've got 24 inch wheels up front, 20 in the back, and the whole thing, like jackrabbits have always looked a little strange. Like they're unique. They kind of march to the beat of their own drum. I described it as like, if the e-bike world were a high school, Jackrabbit would be that girl that like did her own thing and like, you know, dressed her own to her own fashion sense and listened to her own music that no one listened to, but looked like she was having more fun than anybody. Like that's who Jackrabbit is in the e-bike high school. And so to me, it's just fun to see all these different models they come out with. But this time, instead of just being like, you know, a fun like commuter or like a super tiny like folder that you can stick in your boat or your RV, now it's like you can do some serious cargo hauling. You can carry, you know, your family on it, that sort of thing. So they've really expanded the market and the type of riders that I think they're trying to focus on now. So to me, it's fun to see all the cool stuff that the Jackrabbit's doing, and also on so few platforms. This is, I think, their third platform. So they've got like 8 models or something at this point using only 3 different frames. So to me, just very cool. And they keep innovating over there. So I'm glad to see it.
Yeah. I would say if, you know, you were trying to describe the brand ethos of Jackrabbit, it would be no pedals, right? They don't have any bikes with pedals. They have the mullet and they have the smaller bikes, and they've kind of made a couple different platforms out of that idea, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And what's kind of cool about that is like the no pedals kind of gives it a, you know, a lighter, cleaner look. It obviously allows them to make it a little bit more portable, a little bit more able to put it in the back of a car like we saw up here. That is actually kind of crazy that they got two of those things in the back seat.
Right. But,
yeah, it's cool to see what Jackrabbit's doing. I'm surprised they're not getting copied more, because it does seem like there are so many people who buy e-bikes that never pedal. And if you think about the whole extra drivetrain that's involved, that's a lot, you know, that's a lot of space. It's a lot of engineering. It's a lot of weight, extra cost. And it's interesting that Jackrabbit seems to be the only kind of company doing the no pedal drivetrain. Obviously other things, but.
Yeah. Well, there was one company that not only like copied them, but basically made a like pure clone of the original Jackrabbit. Like, yeah, it was so close that probably some parts would have fit between the two of them.
Yeah.
And they didn't last very long. I think Jackrabbit's lawyers, like, you know, fired up their pens, and that was over pretty quickly, which it should have been, because, like, it's one thing to make a bike that, like, fits a similar role, but this thing was just like a straight up clone. And so they shut that down.
Yeah. Well, it's fantastic. We'd like to see these things out there. And, you know, sometimes, like, the vestigial pedals just need to go away, you know, like, some people just are never going to pedal. And so why are we doing this? You know?
And I think it's cool they've embraced that. Now, you know, I like pedals when I want to ride. Like, I grab one of my bikes with pedals, but there are times that I just want to twist the throttle. And so why not embrace that there's a bike for those cases?
Yeah. Do you remember, I think it was it Juiced was making a bike for one of the, like, for Bird, or you might, like, I'm talking like 10 years ago, like, they made a version of the Juiced Scorpion for Bird that didn't have pedals, but that was for, like, ride sharing or something.
Yeah. The Bird Cruiser. I can't remember. I don't think it was Juiced. Maybe it was, but I don't think so. But yeah, I remember that thing.
Yeah. That never came to market, unfortunately.
Yeah. I think they tested it very, in very specific, like, neighborhoods, and then it didn't continue. Yeah. It never got out of pilot.
Unfortunately. All right, let's move on. The bad state of the week is Massachusetts proposes its first in the nation e-bike and moped laws based on speed. Oh, I don't mind that.
So I don't know if I would immediately call them bad on this. Now, there are some, this is just a very different e-bike law than we've seen before. And there are some parts that are interesting. There are some parts that are problematic, but this one is worth, like, just looking at, because it's kind of an interesting new take on this system. So we've seen a lot of new laws proposed. I want to say right away, this is a proposed bill. It's not a law yet, that was just introduced in Massachusetts to create more regulation for e-bikes. It's a trend we're seeing all over the U.S. This time, though, they've created a very different system that not only covers electric bicycles, but covers all micromobility devices. And when I say all, I mean everything, like your kids, like little child bike with training wheels, electric bicycles, scooters, electric skateboards, one wheels, a Harley Davidson motorcycle, everything that is, a mobility device that's not a car is kind of wrapped up in this. And the way they're able to do that is they've basically said, we're going to ignore everything except for speed. And so they've created four different tiers of vehicle classifications based on speed. Tier zero is everything with a designed top speed of up to 20 miles per hour. And so this includes class one and class two e-bikes, but it also includes, you know, standing scooters, jackrabbits would be in there. Pedal bicycles are in here. Like I said, your kid's bicycle with the training wheels is in here, you know, skateboard, anything that goes 20 miles an hour or less is in here. And basically these are allowed pretty much everywhere, bike lanes, mixed use, streets, you know, basically anywhere where bicycles are generally allowed to be, these are allowed to be there. And the other, like, main restriction is a helmet law for, people, I think, under 16, if I'm not mistaken. And then we get speed tier one. That was speed tier zero. It's also confusing. They start with zero. So speed tier one is basically class three e-bike. So it's everything from 21 to 30 miles per hour. And so class three e-bikes go up to 28 miles per hour. And if there happens to be something else weird out there that goes 29 or 30, tier one includes that as well. But generally, this is going to be your class three e-bikes. And so this is regulated fairly similarly to the speed tier zero, in that you get to use bike lanes, you get to use streets, you know, infrastructure, that sort of thing. But you need to be at least 16 years old to ride these. Then you get into speed tier two and three. These are the higher power, or not necessarily power, because, again, like, they don't care about power. All they care about is speed here. These are the higher speed categories. So tier two is 31 to 40 miles an hour, and tier three is anything above 40. So both of these are fairly similar, but you get a little more leeway with tier two. So tier two is designed to be like the Surons, the Tellarios, those types of gray area bikes. Also just the, you know, the quote unquote electric bicycles that go past class three speeds or power levels, things we often refer to as like quasi class four. That's what speed tier two is. And for these, you're not allowed to use bike infrastructure anymore. All right. So you can't be on bike lanes. You can't be on sidewalks. You can't be on mixed use paths. You have to be in the street. And these in Massachusetts would require meeting federal regulations for several of the safety components. So the brakes, the lighting, and the horn, I believe, are the three things listed. So you've got to meet like basically motorcycle level parts for those, which is actually kind of complicated because there's a lot that goes into regulations for brakes and lights and stuff on motorcycles. And then speed tier three, that's basically all the real motorcycles. You know, if you got like a Harley or Hayabusa or whatever, like anything over 40 miles per hour, you're into motorcycle territory. So just kind of a strange way to divide this up. You know, speed tier zero is anything that goes up to 20 miles per hour, pedal bikes, e-bikes, whatever. Speed tier one is 21 to 30. So basically your class threes and anything that goes a little faster. Speed tier two is 31 to 40 miles an hour, kind of like your Tellarias, your Yasmas, your Tudios, that sort of thing, as long as they don't go past 40. And then speed tier three is over 40. Now, there are some advantages here, right? So it's cool that, like, starting with speed tier zero, like, they're just bringing everything in. They're like, you know, Jackrabbit, that's fine. Skateboard, that's fine. You know, if your kid can pedal up to 20 miles an hour, that's awesome. Like, it's all legal. Just, like, use it where it's supposed to be and wear a helmet. Speed tier one, also, they're saying, you know, class three e-bikes, that's cool. Like, green light. Which actually is a big move for Massachusetts, because before they actually regulated class three e-bikes a little bit differently. And I think you needed some sort of like tag. It wasn't like a full license or anything, but there was some sort of like extra registration step. And I'm not sure if those were allowed on the bike lanes or not. So it's kind of cool that speed tier zero and one give e-bikes and all the other e-bike adjacent micromobility more space and bring them into the legal fold. And it's also kind of neat that speed tier two allows some legalization of these gray area bikes, at least, you know, not as electric bicycles, of course, but as some type of legal, you know, speed tier two classification, where now you just need to have like, DOT brakes and lights and stuff like that. The downside here is I just think it's super confusing for everyone. Like, even as I'm going through it now, I wrote the article and I've got to like double check, like, oh, like, speed tier two, that's actually like, you know, like, because right. Starting with zero is just a bad idea in my mind too. Like, why have four tiers when tier three is the highest? Like, how hard is it to get these numbers to make a little bit more sense here, people? So it's confusing. Kind of clashes with the class three system that is broadly accepted in a majority of US states. And so I think it in some ways kind of overregulates in that way. But in other ways, I like to see how inclusive it is. I like to see how many other types of micromobility it brings in and legalizes. And I like the fact that it kind of addresses some of the gray area, you know, moped type or, you know, light electric motorcycle bikes. I even think going up to 40 is kind of a good idea because, you know, like 40 is, you can get hurt going 40 miles an hour. I don't want to say it's safe, but there's a big difference between like 40 and 55 when, you know, like you're riding some of these, you know, higher power, like the Surron Storm B as opposed to a Surron Light B kind of thing. So I think there were wise decisions made here, but I just think it's a little bit rough around the edges still. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them tidy this up a bit before it works its way through committee and into potentially finally becoming law. I don't know. What do you think, Seth? This is a pretty all-encompassing kind of bill.
Yeah, I mean, it's heading in the right direction, for real. I agree with you. The branding is dumb. Like, why not just do speed tier 20, speed tier 30, speed tier 40, yeah, you know, and speed tier infinity? You know, like, why, like, we don't have to, and, you know, with the class one, class two, class three, that's going to be confusing. So let's just start over, you know, like speed tier, the speed number in miles per hour. Not hard.
Yeah. Or give them colors or something. Like, just don't make the numbers misalign. Like, why would a class two be a tier zero?
If you put the speed in miles per hour in the name of the tier, it really isn't. Like, this is not rocket science, people.
Yeah.
Come on. All right, so that's one. I do like you said, I do think they're going in the right direction. So, you know, I'm hesitant to like, you know, poo-poo this too much. You know, I think also, you know, these are a little bit arbitrary, and you know, like yes, it to zero, that's a good thing. But I'm just trying to think, like, where are they going to put, like, you know, on a regular road that there's a 40 mile per hour speed limit? Are they going to let, you know, tier three bikes there? Like, I don't quite understand where these tiers are going to be allowed and disallowed. I guess it would be up to the municipalities. So, like, on the speed limit sign, you would have speed limit 45 miles per hour and speed tier whatever. Like, I don't quite understand how that would work.
So there is some delineation in the bill here, where some of it is left up to states. To municipalities within Massachusetts. But for tier zero and one, they're sort of, you can go anywhere, bike infrastructure and streets. Whereas tier two and three, you're limited to only on streets. You can't use bike lanes or anything like that. But again, speed tier three is like, you know, a Harley Davidson motorcycle. So that's just that's a full motor vehicle at that point. Like you're riding with cars. So there's a little bit of guidance here, but certainly it does allow municipalities to make their own rules as well, which could make things more confusing.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess it's like, it would be fantastic if the whole nation embraced this and then, okay, you know, Yasmas can come out and say, all right, the Yasma IN10 is a speed tier two bike and the IN10 Pro would be a speed tier three bike. Like, and they could have, you know, software limiters on that stuff. That would be good. But because it's Massachusetts, it's like, they're not going to build a separate bike for just Massachusetts. So,
yeah, it would be interesting to see if this gets embraced or copied in other states, because like the tier two does kind of address what we've pined for a little bit with the yep. class four ish type bikes. So there's something there, though. Like when they say, you know, it has to have DOT lights and brakes, like it sounds simple, but there's a lot that goes into that. So, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds to make this a legit tier two, you know, compliant vehicle. Though there are a lot of motorcycles out there today that don't totally meet the federal motor vehicle safety standards, and they're selling just fine. So maybe it's not so important.
Right. Well, we'll see how it goes. All right, let's move on. The uncomfortable reality behind Rivian's new billion-dollar e-bike brand. Uh-oh.
Yeah, so we've talked about this a little bit before, but it's been a while since we've talked about also Rivian's e-bike company, and we're kind of starting to run past when we expected these bikes to be delivered. So I wanted to readdress this a little bit here. And I don't think this is going to come as a shock to anyone. And if anything, the biggest shock to me was that from all the comments, almost everyone was agreeing with me here, which almost never happens to have that much agreement. So I think I'm onto something. But basically, Rivian a few weeks ago, also a few weeks ago, again, also was the name of the company. If you're just listening, this is very confusing. Also raised a lot of additional funding, and that put them at a new valuation of just over $1 billion, which is a lot of money. The last time we saw billion-dollar valuations for e-bike companies, basically every last time we saw that, it went very bad a few years later. So Rad Power Bikes hit $1 billion valuation. Not here anymore. Bird hit $1 billion valuation. They went bankrupt. If you look at the other companies that tried to do not necessarily the hardware things that also is doing, but a similar concept of building out their own proprietary hardware, building out their own innovations, everything in-house, those companies are no longer with us, or they've gone bankrupt and sort of reopened under new management. So companies like Van Moof, companies like Cake, that were famous for doing sort of what also is doing in terms of giving people innovation, yes, but innovation that is steeped in new technology that only the company has, meaning that if something goes wrong and they're not able to deliver on time, then basically everyone is upset about it. Now, I don't know when deliveries are going to start with these also bikes. They're starting to run behind when we expected these to roll out. But even if they come out on time, I think that you have to sort of look at the value proposition here. Because when you look at a TMB that's $4,500 and you say, okay, it's legitimately a very innovative bike, right? Like they've done so many cool things. They've got an innovative frame that you can literally, you know, like rip the back half off and swap in different seats and subframes that remember who the rider is. They've got drive-by-wire, which as an engineer is super interesting. But a lot of this stuff, you have to also ask yourself, all right, so it's really cool technology, but does it really add something that people need every day? Or am I simply paying 4.5 times the price for a bike that goes as far and as fast as all the other bikes on the market? And so while there's some great innovation here, and I have to take my hat off to the engineers at Also and applaud them for building something unique and different and thinking outside the box, I think we have to ask the uncomfortable questions, which are, why is it if every other company that tried to be this innovative has gone out of business, why should we expect that Also is the one that's going to be able to do it right this time? And as of right now, I just don't see any indication that they've got something different that no one else had. Now, they've got great stuff. They've got great people there. They've got great talent, and they've built what legitimately looks like a great piece of engineering. But I just don't see how this succeeds at the scale to make it a profitable company. At this point, the only way I can see this working, and by this I mean Also as a company, is through their commercial side, where they're targeting some of these other models, their enclosed four-wheeler type of vehicles that would be great for like Amazon deliveries or UPS deliveries, and hoping that, you know, FedEx buys thousands of these things. For me, that's just about the only way I can see this being a sustainable business model, because otherwise I just don't see enough people buying $3,500-$4,500 bikes that are pretty awesome, but don't do a lot more in terms of everyday performance than a $1,000 electric or a $1,500 juiced can do. I don't know. I'm just looking at history and questioning how we can be repeating this again. But the fact that so many people agreed with me in the comments, which almost never happens, makes me think I might be onto something.
So I fully agree with you. I think we've had this discussion before. Like, why would I buy this bike and not a $1,500 bike that does 90% of what this bike does? This has a bunch of cool features, like you can pull out the battery and plug in USB-C and, you know, run your laptop all day or back up your house or whatever. The pedal by wire is a really nice feature. It feels very natural. The little Nest thermostat display is super cool, and the user interface is super cool. So like, it has all these innovations, which I think, you know, eventually are going to, you know, the pedal by wire, like all these things are certainly like on the forefront of e-bike technology. But like, to a person who's looking at buying a bike, is spending 3 times as much on an e-bike that you get just a little bit of extra out of worth it? Well, certainly for some people, like this is going to sell to some people, but how big is that addressable market? Now, you could say, well, look at Toyota Corollas. Like, why isn't everybody driving a Toyota Corolla? Why are Mercedes selling tons of vehicles as well at 3-10 times the price of a Corolla, right? So there is a premium market out there, but is the e-bike, you know, an e-bike market is a subset of the car market by a couple orders of magnitude, I would guess. So is that addressable market big enough? Is, you know, also can they make these at scale and make, you know, if they make it at scale, then maybe they can make a $3,000 version of this thing, right? Like somewhere down the line, sell something a little bit less expensive. Well, the problem is they're not even like, we should be riding one of these right by now, and they're not here, and they're having some problems, and they're not communicating, and it's it's a little, it's starting to feel like, oh crap, this is going to be a train wreck. You know, they're going to have like presidential candidates talking about, you remember also like, so I don't like, I don't want that to happen, obviously, but it just like, if for this to work, they have to execute really well. They have to communicate really well. And, they like, where's the bikes? Like, they got to get the bikes out.
Yeah.
And
show me the money.
Show me the money. And it's not there. And we're running out of time. And people are going to lose interest or say, what's going on? Or, you know, write stories like this. And it's, you know, like, you got to hit it. So hopefully any day now they'll release some bikes and we'll ride them. And we'll be like, oh, my gosh, this is great. And people who have $4,500 or more to spend on an e-bike, maybe, you know, somebody in the Silicon Valley who rides, you know, 2 miles to work every day, this makes a ton of sense because, you know, they're not going through the winter or they're not, you know, they don't have a 35-mile commute. Makes sense for a ton of people who have money and who have, you know, good weather and ride quite a bit. But, you know, for this to work, they got to execute. And we haven't seen that execution yet. And we're kind of running out of time to, you know, to see that happen. So, and to get a $1 billion valuation now with all this uncertainty, I don't know. I don't know if I would be putting money down on that. So,
yeah, that's just a risky bet. And yeah. I wish them luck. Like I want them to succeed, but I can't, you know, I can't wish them into success.
Right. And we've acknowledged that like the pedal by wire, the user interface, there's that, you know, the battery that comes out, those things are all like, those technologies are going to be the future of e-bikes. Like if you took a bike an e-bike in 10 years is going to look a lot more like an also bike than any other bike out there on the market, in my opinion. So like, this is the future. You know, very obviously, but they've got to bring it full. And this is like one of those like Elon Musk moments where you got to just kind of, I mean, they've done their, you know, I don't want to say bullshitting, but they've done their pitch. And now they've got to start making things happen. So, we're pulling for them, but, like I'm not putting my money on that quite yet.
Yeah. It's the put up or shut up stage at this point.
Yep. All right, let's move on. Segway launches 60-mile-per-hour electric dirt bike, and it's basically a full e-motorcycle.
Yeah, this is the same Segway that like you're thinking of, you know, the old, you know, self-balancing Segway. But now they're doing some really impressive things in micromobility. A few weeks ago, we were talking about their new e-bikes. We were talking about how many scooters they've sold. This week, they've got a 60-mile-per-hour electric motorcycle. Now, this is a dirt bike. It's for off-road, the Zaber 300. But, you know, even though it's not a street-legal bike, this is, for all intents and purposes, a full-size electric motorcycle. This is not a toy. This is not a scooter. This is not a mobility device. I mean, we're talking 0 to 50 and 5 point. It's not a hoverboard. Yeah, like just really, really impressive build here. You know, from the design to the performance, it's under 200 pounds. It's 187 pounds, 85 kilos. Like I said, it does 60 miles an hour. It's 21 kilowatts, the motor in this thing. That's the peak power, right? It's not the continuous power, but it can pull up to 21 kilowatts. And so this is a very impressive bike here. The only thing that struck me a little bit surprising is the battery's a bit small at 3 kilowatt hours. And again, this is a dirt bike, so you know it's meant for, you know, having some fun on, but you're not commuting long distances to work on a bike like this. So I'm not surprised to see a bit of a smaller battery here, but it's still smaller than I would have expected. But just about everything else here, I gotta hand it to Segway. Like they really upped their game with this thing, from moving from, you know, sort of like nerdy self-balancing scooters to like fine kick scooters, but that were kind of, you know, not toys, but, you know, smaller things, to moving into pretty legit and impressive electric bicycles, to now what is a full-on electric motorcycle that, if this thing was designed for road use, could certainly hang with other light electric commuter motos, if not for the slightly smaller battery. So props to Segway on this one. I should also mention the price also. It's like $5,300. So again, like still pretty darn good compared to the cost of electric dirt bikes. And, you know, it's a bit of a premium over like a Saran or a Talaria, but it's also, you know, a slightly bigger, slightly more powerful bike than we're used to seeing from them. This is not a 6 kilowatt motor. It's a 21 kilowatt motor. So for $5,300, they've done a nice thing here.
Yeah, this would be comparable to like the Talaria Komodo maybe, and the bigger Suron, right?
Yeah, the Stormbee, if I'm not mistaken.
Stormbee, right. And similarly priced. Now we know Segway has kind of repurposed what was it, Talaria or Surons in the past? Is this?
Yeah, it was Suron in the past. I believe this is their own. Yeah, I do not think this is just a rebadged bike. Certainly not from Suron this time, because they did have the, I think they called it the X160 and 260 was like a rebadged light B. But this time, I think this is their own bike.
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. And it's kind of like, oh, this is going to be, you know, Segway sell their stuff in like Best Buys and Targets too. So I wonder if we're going to see these things showing up at the local big box store. That'd be kind of wild.
Ripping down aisle 9.
Yeah. Like the kids who are, you know, playing basketball and the basketball hoops in the stores are going to be riding these around.
Laying down a rubber snake on the linoleum.
It'd be a wild day at Target and these are coming down the aisles. Yeah. So great to see Segway doing this. You know, I really like what they're doing. You know, with a company like that, I just wonder if there's a homologation effort underway there. It would be nice to see a street legal version of this.
Yeah, well, I definitely think that they started in the dirt just because it's easier, less red tape. But, you know, it does beg the question because it's so close. Like the performance is there. Now it's largely just choosing the right components. You know, the brake levers have to be the right shape. The lights need to be the right size and distance, you know, brakes, that sort of thing. So like, you know, it's 90% of the way there. Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe that's down the road for them, or maybe they just don't want to deal with that hassle. Because there's also a lot of paperwork that goes into that. Like it's not just the parts. You got to like have all the right files filed with the government and that sort of thing. So it might just be too much of a headache for Segway as a Chinese company at this point.
Yep. Well, can't wait to see it. Hopefully we'll be getting one of these here in the next couple of weeks. It'd be nice to give that a go. All right, let's move on. Last story. If anybody has any questions, there's already a lively discussion in the comments, but throw your question in the comments or comments. All right. Honda patents fake clutch for electric motorcycles, and it might actually make sense.
Yeah, I wanted to save a weird one for the end. We have seen a lot of sort of fake gears or electric clutches for electric motorcycles before, but this is the first one I've seen that I don't immediately hate. Not that that's a compliment, but this one made me think twice. So maybe it'll make you think a little as well. So this is a Honda patent, which does not mean it's going to, you know, come to production, but Honda has apparently designed this and gone far enough to have, you know, a full working plan for it. And it's designed for their off-road electric motorcycles, for their dirt bikes. And it's not just a sort of like a fake gearing thing, which we've seen before. This is an electric clutch that actually functions the way a clutch would on a typical combustion engine dirt bike. In that the idea is that when you pull in the clutch, you basically remove power or you feather it back the more you pull it in, and then you're able to release it and sort of dump all that power and torque at once. Now, if you're asking, why would you need that? Because you can just do that with the twist of a wrist on a normal electric dirt bike. I agree with you, but what Honda seems to be doing here is they're trying to make the bike more intuitive for people that are switching from gasoline-powered dirt bikes to electric dirt bikes. And because clutch use is so integral to the way dirt bikes are ridden, mean, it's, you use it for any combustion motorcycle, but for dirt bikes, like, it's so important for controlling the torque curve that they've tried to create a way to reproduce that with an electric motor for people that are converting over. And going beyond just the clutch lever, they've done some other interesting things just to make it feel a little more realistic to an old school combustion dirt bike. They even have a little motor in the the end of the handlebar that gives you haptic feedback to sort of shake and vibrate the way a combustion engine motorcycle would right when you drop that clutch and suddenly you feel that huge torque kick in. So there's like, there's maybe some weird things. Like
smoke creators for the scale.
Like, look, you can, like, recharge your
smoke coming out of the back. Look how fast it is.
Yeah, it's kind of like a hand holding for old school riders. And so again, like, I'm someone who came of age with electric motorcycles, right? Like, of all of my two-wheeled motorcycling experience, it's like 99% of the time, probably literally, on electric motorcycles, with the others being like borrowing a bike from a friend or like needing to do like taking the test and, you know, needing to do like four lessons or something. So I'm just at the very beginning of when people are like coming of age into electric motorcycles. But I know that there are people out there that have been riding combustion dirt bikes for years and years and decades. And so I get what Honda is trying to do here. And again, like, as an engineer, this is actually one of the nicer implementations I've seen of like fake clutches for electric motorcycles. But it just seems like, for one, this is a problem that just isn't going to exist in, you know, another 10 or 20 years, because all the kids that are riding Surons now are going to, like, they'll just never know what a clutch was. And I just think this is kind of like a stopgap measure. And part of me wonders whether this will ever even be produced, because it adds cost, it adds complication. And I just don't know how many people are going to even want this. But it's still kind of fascinating to me as an engineer to see what they've done here. So I just thought that was kind of a fun little, you know, keep your finger on the pulse of the transition from gasoline to electric motorcycles.
Yeah, I mean, so if we look at this, like, if we zoom out a little bit, we've been doing this kind of thing for a long time. I don't know, when you were a kid, did you ever put baseball cards in spokes of your bike?
No, I didn't do that.
Trying to simulate something else we've been doing that for a long time. So yeah. I guess this is, you know, this has some precedent. Like, we like to create, you know, I think there is a segment of the market that would appreciate this, especially if they can make it, you know, transparent. There is like a launch mode in electric vehicles where they kind of throw a lot of juice into like a capacitor that can hold it for a few seconds and throw a little bit more power out. So, you know, there is like some precedent for this, but, you know, yeah, I agree with you. In the long run, this is just going to be like a footnote, you know, like a transition type of thing. So not a big, it's more like a curiosity than anything else, I would say.
Yeah. I'm right there with you.
All right, let's get into the comments, which were dominated early by Michael Sprinzelis. Nice to see the new Juiced sticking to the old Juiced ethos, competitive prices with better specs. Even if Juiced doesn't advertise how, any controller can be hacked if the market calls for it. Yeah, I guess it's like, how easy do they make it to be hacked? I mean, if you're in the code of the controller, if you can get into that kind of stuff, then you can obviously do anything. Yep. All right. Extra Hero says, Seth, you might be one of the few parents better at technology than their kid. Well, depends on the technology, to be honest with you. Also, any quick thoughts on Tim Cook stepping down, the Apple CEO? He missed the AI revolution. Siri's garbage. I really can't believe Siri is so bad nowadays. All right, that's digressing. But anyway, Tim Cook could have stayed if he wanted to. I'm sure he was just like, it's go time. All right, Michael Sprinzelis, just swap the inputs and outputs and solid state batteries should work cross-platform. Yeah, I mean, you could do that with anything, but like, do people really want to do that?
Yeah, the only problem is some of those smarter e-bikes that actually have like a CAN bus system to communicate with the battery.
BMS.
And then it's not as simple. But yeah, for a lot of e-bikes, it's still just like red to red, black to black.
Right. 48 volts coming down the pike. Right. I can't imagine a small hub hauling 500 pounds of cargo uphill. Yeah, I don't know about that. Uphills. It's going to have to be a pretty shallow hill, to, especially without pedals.
Or a warm motor.
Right. In theory, I prefer regulating the speed of the vehicles over regulating the power. All right. And then rougher on the edges, regulation beats the ridiculous out of left field regs we've been getting. Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. That was about Massachusetts. Skeptic says, I was disappointed that Rivian didn't have any also reps at their Chicago block parties. Those block parties seem like perfect opportunities to sell bikes. Yeah, I mean, that's an opportunity. Rivian's got a lot of public awareness. Why not throw some also bikes into it, right?
Yeah, I heard sort of anecdotally that at Sea Otter, there were test bikes and they were kind of having some problems. Now, to be fair, test bikes at bike shows just get the, you know, living daylights beat out of them. So if you've got what's already a fairly high tech and potentially kind of fragile prototype e-bike, it doesn't surprise me. But yeah, I heard there was a lot of like pushing bikes back to the booth kind of thing. So maybe they're going easy on the public showings for now.
Yeah. I'm going to a Rivian event at the end of the month, or actually the beginning of June. And I'm hoping that they have a few bikes there just to play with. Carl in San Diego says, sorry to say, because I know Seth is a Rivian fan, but they are toast, dead company walking. Oh yeah, I have my shirt on. It was never a sustainable model. Again, like people buy Mercedes, like they cost four times what a Toyota Corolla costs. So there is a market for premium bikes. It's not a huge market.
Well, I don't know that proves that. That proves there's a market for premium cars. I'm still not sold that there's enough of a market for premium bikes yet. I think one day. I just don't know if we're there yet.
Right. I mean, all right. Well, let's dive into that a little bit. Like, what does buying a Mercedes get you that buying a Toyota Corolla does not?
Like, I think the peace sign with the extra leg.
Yeah.
Without the extra leg.
It's a smoother ride. It's a, you know, a bigger car, obviously, higher top speed. You know, you're in luxury a little bit. Does the also bike give you any of that? Does it give you a higher top speed? Not really. Does it give you a luxurious seat? Not really. I mean, I guess, I don't know. Like,
I think the bigger thing and the thing that most people who drive a Mercedes might not admit to, but I still think is a big part of the purchasing decision is the status, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're buying it at least partially for that status, even if you can tell yourself, you know, but the seats are nicer and the engineering's better, if you're buying it partly for the status, then if e-bikes just aren't as an industry, just aren't there enough yet to convey status, then I don't think that the premium e-bike is sellable yet. Once they are, you know, maybe that's 5, maybe that's 10 years from now, then it's a different story. But right now, we just don't, as a society, we don't value e-bikes in the way that we value cars as a status symbol yet.
Right. That's a good point. Maybe they can get that to change. I don't know. Michael Spinzella says, Segway is now cool. No more mall cop vibes. Yeah. I rode the 6-speed Brammo and really liked it. Not hard and more engaging. Not sure if fake stuff is useful to anyone.
I never got to ride a Brammo, and it's kind of a bummer. Like, they were around just when I was getting into, it was around like 2009, 2010, when I was getting into electric two-wheelers, and that was like Brammo's on the way out.
All right, Mercedes will go 70 years. No.
Maybe the older ones. Yeah, now it's all computers. Everything computer.
No, that's not it. But I mean, I think it's the status symbol. It's mostly, but also, you know, it is a more sophisticated ride. Like, you can kind of figure, like, you know, if you, for instance, are on the Autobahn, you're not going to get a Corolla and try to go 120 miles per hour, right? So that saves you time. Like there is like measurable improvements.
I love your justification for it. I have to get the Mercedes. I need to get to work on time.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. You could just ways you can justify. If a company is wanting to sell upmarket e-bikes, they need to build the marketing by demonstrating their daily utility. Well, I guess that's what they have to do. That's their homework, right?
Maybe, but I still think that the fact that upmarket bikes aren't a status symbol, I think it's an us problem and not an e-bike company problem. Like as society haven't attributed the value to them that society attributes to cars. And
but let's think about like Trek and Specialized sell $5,000 mountain bikes and commuter bikes. Like,
and that's, yeah. And so I think that's two things. One, those are great bikes and like, you know, they build, you know, they're lighter, they're stronger, that sort of thing. And so, you know, they're using more exotic materials. They're producing it at smaller numbers. And so the prices are higher, but also they're selling those into very specific communities. They're selling those into communities that know what a $6,000 mountain bike is and appreciate that. That community doesn't yet exist in general society for e-bikes. And I think that's the main difference.
Right. But I mean, we know Rivian, sorry, Alsos, head is from Specialized. So maybe that's what they're trying to create here. And, you know, they haven't done that yet. We can say that, but maybe that's the goal.
Yeah, but I just still think I agree that, I mean, that's what they're trying to do, but I just still think the crux of that problem is with us, like the larger us society. It's because also has demonstrated that they can build something amazing, and they have. I mean, assuming it comes out. The question is whether society will buy into it.
Right.
And that's the problem is left with us.
Yeah. And Carl kind of hits one point is like, if you can replace your car with it, then all of a sudden it's got a lot more value. One other thing that brings up is if bike companies can somehow, and maybe also can do this, show that a certain person is riding a certain amount of miles on an e-bike, I wonder if they could get insurance companies to lower their rates on their cars because, you know, you're driving your car less. I mean, also with all their knowledge of, you know, who's driving, where they're driving, commutes, all this other stuff, maybe that's a way to kind of add value.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
All right,
on the next podcast. All right, thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll be back here in another 2 weeks for the next episode of the Wheelie Podcast. We'll see you next time, everyone.